Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to the DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm your co-host today, Victor Benitez. I'm a librarian at the Shaw Library. I'm joined by J.C. Caballero, Will Reeve, and David Gillette. You guys go ahead and introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm JC Cavallaro, and I am a children's librarian at the Woodridge Neighborhood Library.
Hi, I'm Will Reed. I work at the DC Library Studio Lab.
And I'm David Gillette. I'm a library associate at the Mount Pleasant Neighborhood Library.
Great. Well, thanks for being here with me, guys.
So on today's Notes from the Library episode, we'll be discussing the library's annual month-long celebration, Uncensored, celebrating the freedom to read.
Also, later in the month, we will be joining ALA celebration of Banned Books Week. David, when is that?
Banned Books Week takes place from the 23rd of September to the 29th. It's an annual event celebrating the freedom to read. Banned Books Week was launched in 1982 in response to a sudden surge in the number of challenges to books in schools, bookstores, and libraries. It's typically been held during the last week of September, and it highlights the value of free and open access to information. It brings together the entire book community, librarians, booksellers, publishers, journalists, teachers, and readers of all types in shared support of the freedom to seek and to express ideas, even those some might consider unorthodox or unpopular.
So I guess when we talk about banning books, like I guess I visualize some sort of big person saying you cannot read this and put like hiding them away in a black box. But how exactly are books being banned nowadays?
Well, yeah, I think often people imagine maybe when books are banned, like a pile of books that are on fire or something from literature, but often they're just being challenged by individuals, parents, teachers. Sometimes people take challenges to school boards, and it's basically happening on an individual level where someone has an objection to the content of a particular book, and they're saying, we don't want this book either in school curriculum, we don't want it on library shelves, we think this book should not exist and be read by anyone. And we as librarians disagree with that.
Right. So it's not like the federal government's coming in and saying and taking away books.
No.
It's individuals, it may be teachers, it may be parents oftentimes. So we all work in the library. Have you guys seen, experienced anything where maybe something was challenged? And how did you react to that?
Well, I've had, I work with children at the library, and I have done so for about 6 years. So I have had individual parents object to particular books that were maybe on display, books that they didn't agree with the content. Maybe it was inappropriate for a child to be learning about. But I've always stressed, and I think most of us, all of us librarians stress, that the book is really up to the individual reader. So, parents are welcome to choose the books that are appropriate for their child and their family, but we don't make that call for other families or other children. We think that anyone should be able to choose. And, during Banned Books Week, we're often highlighting those books that are maybe have been controversial, mm-hmm. And letting people decide for themselves whether they want to read them or not.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in my own experience, I once created a banned book display. And I was approached by a gentleman saying, "Oh, well, no one's banning books. Like, why is there this need?" I was like, "Well, you're right. Like the federal government is not, but in many cases, it's on the local level, where especially like we live in D.C. that's very progressive and liberal, but in other states that might be more conservative, like you hear about cases where books are being challenged." School curriculums are being affected. And JC, you're exactly right. Like, as a librarian, like, we don't try and censor anything. And we actually encourage people to try and get to access information that presents counterpoints to their opinions. But we brought in a list of some of the books that have been challenged in 2017. Do you want to share some of that, Will?
Yeah, I'll start. So the number one challenged book last year was 13 Reasons Why by Jay Asher. And so it was challenged and even banned in multiple school districts because it discusses suicide. So the second most challenged book was The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexi, and it was challenged in school curriculums because of profanity and situations that were deemed sexually explicit. Somebody else want to pick up from there?
Yeah, Drama, the graphic novel not by Raina Telgemeier, the Stonewall Honor Award-winning graphic novel, was challenged and banned in school libraries because it includes LGBT characters and was considered confusing.
I consider that book to be awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, another book that was challenged is The Kite Runner, written by Khalid Hosseini. It's a critically acclaimed multi-generational novel, and it was challenged and banned because it includes sexual violence and was thought to lead to terrorism and promote Islam.
The next up on the list of most challenged is the book George, written by Alex Gino. This is a book written for elementary age children. It's a Lambda Literary Award winner, and it has been challenged and banned because it includes a transgender child as a character.
So the other book is Sex is a Funny Word, written by Curry Silverberg and illustrated by Fiona Smith. This 2015 informational children's book written by a certified sex educator was challenged because it addresses sex education and is believed to lead to children to want to have sex or ask questions about sex.
Yeah, and this is really interesting to me. The next book is To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, because of violence and its use of the N-word. It's really interesting to me because that's a book that I'm guessing that all of us had to read at some point in school.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, these books are still being challenged.
The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, obviously a huge deal, won numerous awards, circulates still a ton, challenged and banned in school libraries and curricula because it was considered pervasively vulgar. It depicts drug use, profanity, and offensive language.
Another children's book on the list is And Tango Makes Three, written by Peter Parnell and Justin Richardson and illustrated by Henry Cole. Returning after a brief hiatus from the top 10 most challenged list, this ALA notable children's book, which came out in 2005, was challenged and labeled because it features a same-sex relationship between two penguins. And it's very cute.
It is cute. I've seen that one.
Yeah.
And also, last on the list is I Am Jazz, written by Jessica Herthel and Jazz Jennings, and illustrated by Shalag McNichols. This autobiographical picture book, co-written by the 13-year-old protagonist, was challenged because it addresses gender identity.
And these books, of course, weren't banned everywhere. This this list is the top 10 from 2017, which is tracked by the ALA Office for Intellectual Freedom. And this encompasses 354 challenges in 2017. That's to libraries and school and university materials. Those 354 challenges included 416 books. So I guess some people were challenging more than one book.
Right. Yeah, so based on this list, I guess it seems like anything that strays from heterosexual sex, anything that presents like a very diverse community, is oftentimes comes into question or is being mm-hmm. challenged. I guess maybe we can think about how we would react when we're being challenged at our job. which we are, especially now, oftentimes people come and say, oh, like the theme of fake news has mm-hmm. been very popular within during this current administration. So like maybe what are some strategies as librarians or information professionals that we can maybe implement at work?
Well, I think from, you know, from just from the ordering of books, you know, I think our system particularly does a great job of trying to be as inclusive as possible, trying to offer different perspectives like mm-hmm. we talked about, and trying to make sure that people see themselves reflected in books. So often if someone is objecting to a book, it's because it doesn't reflect their personal experience.
Right.
So just like, you know, we have different programs for different communities, different types of people, different types of interests. You know, we're not telling anyone they have to come to them if it doesn't appeal to them or their point of view. Our books aren't, you know, we don't read every single book on our shelves. You know, not everything appeals to our personal interests either. But I think making sure that people know that this is a place for the whole community to be. And I think by calling attention to the fact that that is not the case maybe in some other places, or maybe it's not as supported, I think people generally have a great response to what we do with Banned Books Week and, you know, all throughout the year, trying to make it an inclusive place for the whole community, because we are the public library, you know.
Right. Yeah.
We don't cater to just one type of person.
Mm-hmm. I think most of the time people find it surprising that we're here living in America where we have freedom of speech, and yet we're still facing challenges constantly. And yeah. Well, today we're discussing Uncensored and the month-long activities that the library is hosting. JC, you've been on the Uncensored committee or working group, I don't know.
That's right.
So what are some of the things that you guys have been up to?
Well, this year's theme for Uncensored DC is called Words Ignite, the Literature of Activism. And this theme was chosen this year to tie into the year-long celebration that we're having to commemorating the 50th anniversary of 1968. Mm-hmm. It was a big year in U.S. history. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert F. Kennedy were assassinated. The Poor People's Campaign, which Dr. King was organizing at the time of his death, it brought activists from across the nation to D.C. for Resurrection City. It was also the groundbreaking of what would become the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library here in D.C. and the opening of Federal City College, which is now part of the University of District of Columbia. So for the 50th anniversary, the city and the library has been really hosting a series of programs and events highlighting the experiences of 1968 locally and nationally. You may have seen some things involved with the Hunger Wall Project. There's been this mural project. There was the Soul Tent that was traveling around the city. Mm-hmm. There's also, if you go on our website to dclibrary.org/1968, there's a ton of great digital resources. You can see photos of Resurrection City. You can listen to music from that period. There's a lot of great online collections. And there's also a great website called DC1968Project.com, which is a digital storytelling project by Maria Annette McWhirter. And she has a new post every day for the whole year, like visual storytelling. And you can submit memories and things. So So this idea of art as activism and literature as activism really tied in to what we wanted to do with Banned Books Week and with Uncensored, and to talk about how, you know, literature and ideas have always been like a catalyst for change.
Right.
And for activists to, you know, in 1968 and today. So we wanted to highlight that with some events. Yeah.
And we also have a quote from our executive director, Richard Reyes Gavilan. David, do you want to read the quote?
For sure. We live in a world where the censorship of ideas, the manipulation of facts, and the distortion of truth compromise our ability to make sense of our times. books, fiction and nonfiction alike, have long been an effective and crucial tool for exposing injustice. Protecting the freedom of expression, the freedom to read, and the freedom to espouse unpopular opinions has never been more important.
Ooh, that's a good quote.
It is a good quote. I think Richard is absolutely right. Like, today's age, like, we have so much information, and sometimes it's very hard to kind of navigate through that and determine what's correct, what's false, what's accurate, what's biased. And as information professionals, I guess we try and help people accessing information, how to begin thinking about these ideas and how to navigate them. I think it's really important for people to individually decide what they want to read. No one should be deciding that for them. I guess as a children's librarian, like, how do you deal with minors?
It's interesting. And often kids come into the library because they have school assignments, you know, things that they kind of do have to read for school. But often they're looking for materials for fun too. So sometimes it depends on whether they have a parent with them, and how involved the parent is with their reading. I always try and encourage kids to find something that they're interested in rather than what they think they should be reading. You know, I tell them, like, hey, if maybe they're interested in fantasy literature, and I'll find them a couple of books, and I'll tell them, you know, if you don't like these, it's okay. You don't have to finish them. We can try something else next time. You know, like, this isn't for school. This is for fun. This is for you. And sometimes, you know, their parents may have opinions about what they might want to try reading, and I try and support that and give them options for both. Because, you know, we want kids and adults to enjoy what they're reading, to have it expand their mind and their interests. We don't want it to feel like a chore or have reading be a burden, because when reading's a burden for kids, they're not going to be lifelong readers,
right,
you know?
Exactly. I mean, for me, on a personal level, the library was extremely important. I mean, as a gay male, when I first realized that I was gay, like, the library offered those type of books, mm-hmm. where I can learn about my sexuality and orientation in a safe space, away from maybe, like, people who might criticize me or put me down, mm-hmm. for my sexual orientation. So I'm pretty thankful to public libraries in creating a safe space for everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, and it's not always easy either. I mean, we get often so many customers who complain about why we're doing this, or why we have certain type of individuals even at the library. So it's like, sometimes it could be a daily, like, battleground. So we have some uncensored events all month long. What are some of those events?
So, well, we have a great kickoff event, which is happening during Banned Books Week, which is Monday, September 24th at 7:00. And that's going to be at the Watha T. Daniel Shaw Library. And that is the team Racine Presents, Racine's Reading Room. Which we've done for the past few years. It's, if you've never been to an event hosted by Racine, they're always a lot of fun, very engaging. And this is the third edition, actually, of Racine's Reading Room here at the library. The topics discussed will be censorship and free speech. There's going to be a ton of guests and performers. This event is free and open to the public. Former DC council member Carol Schwartz will read from her recently published memoir. Author Cheryl Head will read from one of her novels. Author and chair of the annual Outright LGBTQ Literary Festival, David Ring, will be there. The poet and winner of the 2018 Ask Racine Poetry Slam will be there as well. Poet C. Thomas, poet C. Etta Powers, a comedy by Beverly White, an interview with the Swerve Show co-host Tony Nelson, and a special performance by the Young Playwrights Theater. It's going to be like a packed lineup, super fun. It starts at 7, but there's also a pre-show mixer where people can kind of mingle and chat, and there'll be some light refreshments at 6:00, and then the show will start at 7. This is at the Shaw Library on Monday, September 24th. Be there.
Thanks, JC. Well, I guess, do you have other as well, or?
If you'd like me to go over some, yeah. So there's the ongoing scavenger hunt, obviously.
Yes.
But there is a scavenger hunt cocktail party. Let's see, on Tuesday, September 4th.
No.
What? No, that's what it says here.
Well, the scavenger hunt started on September 4th.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, that already happened. Yeah.
So the cocktail party is actually... here, I can talk about the scavenger hunt a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure. So if you don't know, there is the annual Uncensored DC Banned Books Scavenger Hunt, which leads up to the cocktail party, as Will mentioned, has started. We hide hundreds of some of these banned books we mentioned at various locations around the city, libraries, coffee shops, other community partners. The theme for this hunt, as we mentioned, is Words Ignite, the Literature of Activism. So each title reflects how literature can be used as a tool for change. They're wrapped in a special cover, which has a message that relates to the book and the message of the book. So they're very recognizable once you know what they look like. And actually, if you collect all six of them, they make a really cool image for your bookshelf along the spines. Tons of people get really into this scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
They want to collect them all. They go all over the city. It's a great way to actually explore the city and get to know the neighborhood libraries. So clues are announced every weekday morning on Morning Edition on WAMU. Little riddles to point you to where the books are that day until September 28th. And you can also, there's also clues posted on our social media platforms under the hashtag UncensoredDC. So we post daily clues to the Instagram for the foundation, which is at @DCPL_literati and at DC Public Library on Twitter, at DCPL, and on Facebook at DC Library. You get to keep the books when you find them, and in addition to keeping them, you can also win raffle prizes like free museum tickets to the museum, gift certificates to local restaurants, free tickets to the cocktail party, which I'm going to talk about in just a second. You just have to post a photo of the book that you found to your social media account with the hashtag UncensoredDC. And of course, has anyone been to the cocktail party here before? No?
I've been to
You've been, Victor?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, just people like to gather and celebrate and drink and help the library out.
Yeah.
So it's a fun event.
Yeah, the Uncensored Cocktail Party, it's the DC Public Library Foundation's annual fundraiser, which celebrates the freedom to read, create, and express. This year's party is at the Blind Wino on September 28th at 7 o'clock. It includes banned book-themed cocktails created by the best local bartenders, performances by local musicians, provocative art installations designed by local artists, maker crafts led by DC Public Library librarians, which I helped out with last year. It was a lot of fun. And a pop-up market with made in DC businesses and so much more. The pop-up market is super cool. You can, you know, get awesome gifts for your friends or for yourself. Tickets are on sale now. They are $60. And that goes to the DC Public Library Foundation, which supports many of the awesome things that we get to do as a library and as a community. You can find all of that at dclibrary.org/bannedbooks, including the list that we read out today.
Right.
Of the challenged books and more information about why we celebrate this. And I did promise some lovely folks on Twitter that I would read a clue to point anyone listening to maybe finding some more books for the scavenger hunt today.
Do you have that clue?
I have that clue. I wrote it in the car on the way here, so it might not be as polished as some of those on WAMU. Shout out to them for being so awesome. All right, so your clue for finding some books today are as follows. Punk shows on the rooftop at this library, you'll see, or find a banned book, or perhaps two or three. All right, I'm going to read one more time. Punk shows on the rooftop at this library, you'll see, or find a banned book, or perhaps two or three.
So if you know what this is, go find the book.
Go
right?
Find a book, yeah.
Yep, go find
and
a book.
Say hi to your local librarians
yeah.
who are putting in the good work.
Also, I wanted to do a quick shout out to the DC Foundation, DC yes. Public Library Foundation. They do great work supporting our work and giving us good funding for our programs and services. So shout out to the foundation.
And making this scavenger hunt happen, right. Which so many people love every year.
Yeah, and just logistically been really hard, but they pull it off.
Yeah, and all of our community partners who books out.
All the local bookstores and
coffee shops, everyone gets really into it, and it's so much fun, and it's all about supporting the freedom to read and be intellectually curious.
So Will, today we're remembering September 11.
Yeah.
And you were looking up some information on how the terrorist attack affected, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So obviously today is like the anniversary of a really scary day in my recollection, and I'm sure for many of you, that same day I believe the MLK library was even evacuated. In the midst of all of that trauma and fear, there was a definite, impact on access to information. Some of it more subtle than others. So one thing that I think people talk about the most about, censorship and access to information after 9/11 is... who here likes music? Everyone, right?
We all do, yeah.
Music's fine.
Yeah, okay. Well, all of us like music except for maybe JC.
It's fine. No, I'm kidding.
So have y'all heard of, Clear Channel Communications, now known as iHeartRadio? So they didn't explicitly tell any of their stations not to play music, but they kind of created a list of music that they thought would be inappropriate. And it's surprising as you go through the list. It's something like 168 songs. Some of the songs by their title, you can sort of see why, their fear was that it would, in the moment of raw emotion, hurt people and stuff like that. Mm. And others, like Highway to Hell, for example, you're not allowed to play that. Anything by Rage Against the Machine, off limits. So, and some of it, I could sort of see both arguments, but this is kind of how censorship or challenges happens, Right.
It's like a fine line between like trying to be sensitive and like trying to be like, this song is anti-American.
Right.
We can't listen to it.
Right. Now, obviously, we're librarians, library workers. We're really focused primarily on books. So, also after 9/11, there have been probably most famously in 2011, there was a planned Quran book burning that was planned as a way of remembering the victims of 9/11. Oh, yeah. And then, if you guys remember earlier, when we were reading last year's banned books, top 10, number 4 was The Kite Runner. And if you remember, I think it was Victor who read the reasons for its challenges. It's thought to lead to terrorism and to promote Islam. So, like, the ramifications of what happened on that day have still impacted our culture and sort of echo on down. That's kind of what I found when I was sort of digging around on that.
I mean, I've read that book, and I mean, it's a great book.
Yeah. It's a very sad book.
It's a sad book, but but I don't know. What I took away from it was, these characters have pretty tragic experiences, and they have those resilience to come out of them and form their own personal lives.
Right.
So in no way do I think it promotes like terrorism or leads to terrorism.
Right.
And there have been studies, which I can't cite because I don't remember them, but I can't cite specifically the studies, but just let's say that, when children or, human beings read books about other people's experiences, it just makes them more empathetic people.
Yeah.
It doesn't, drive them to violence or to completely, you know, overhauling who they are, maybe innately. You know, a book cannot turn someone gay. A book cannot make someone a terrorist, right? It's just offering them a different perspective than maybe what some people are used to. And that's a good thing.
Yeah. No, and also, like, being able to read these different perspectives lead to just being able to critically think on your own and form your own opinions, which is really important. I mean, if you're someone that plans to go to school and write or just be a professional, like, you will need these skills. Mm-hmm. So it's really a disservice when we limit people's information, when we tell them, oh, you can't read this or that. It's really great disservice, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So did you want to read your favorite passage?
Oh, yeah, I can read a favorite passage from a burned book here. Let me dig through my... not a burned book, sorry. I was still thinking about that thing with the Quran. Burning. Yeah, I was like, that's so
horrible.
Terrible.
Well, so horrible.
It made me think of, like, the whole Nike thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. These right? Very extreme reactions.
Just don't, if you don't want to read it, just don't read it.
Just don't. And if you don't want to wear it, don't wear it. You
exactly.
know?
And if you already paid for it, you already paid for it.
Exactly. Not,
Well, that's another thing I also never understood. You know, if we did believe in doing book burnings, like, I'm still thinking, you know, this guy bought 40,000 Qurans and then burned them. Like,
he kept the Quran printing industry in business.
Yeah.
Can't apply logic to it, really.
So anyway, so this is from The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger. Among other things, you'll find that you're not the first person who was ever confused and frightened and even sickened by human behavior. But you're by no means alone on that score. You'll be excited and stimulated to know. Many, many men have been just as troubled morally and spiritually as you are not right now. Happily, some of them kept records of their troubles. You'll learn from them if you want to. Just as someday, if you have something to offer, someone will learn from you as well. It's a beautiful reciprocal arrangement. And it isn't education, it's history, it's poetry. So yeah, and that's a book that's been challenged many times.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, almost every, like, does a middle schoolers read this book?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
what do you guys think about the passage, or what do you know exactly what was so offensive? Or
I think he smokes a lot in the book.
Yeah. He curses.
Calls everybody a phony.
Yeah, he calls everyone a phony.
Right, I do remember that.
Yeah.
So I guess he's not, like, a good role model?
Not a good role model, okay. Yeah. And some books are just challenged because parents or people in the community think they're not appropriate for the age group that they're being pushed towards.
Okay.
But again, you know, obviously, like, in the library, we classify certain things as adult fiction, certain things as teen and children, and a lot of that has to do with content. Some of it's reading level or interest level, but, you know, I think everyone should just read what they want to read and, like, learn from it, like we talked about.
Yeah, it would become really difficult if we were, you know, trying to enforce different parenting styles about what's appropriate for kids.
Well, like, we don't know what's right for a certain family.
Right.
We leave that up to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I think importantly, it's like when you read something that maybe is questionable or is different from your point of view, it leads you to ask these really important questions. And you should be able to ask these questions to, like, maybe your parent or your an adult, someone, a teacher, a librarian. And I think in asking those questions, it leads to further understanding and dialogue and this change that we hope to see and continue to see.
One thing that my mom would always bring up when people, you know, were talking about banning books or not letting their kids read books was often this came up in reference to Harry Potter. Of course, I'm dating myself, but that was the big thing at the time. And she would always say, man, do people who don't want their kids reading Harry Potter know how much worse it could be? At this point, I was reading the Philip Pullman, His Dark Materials books that you know, arguably end with the characters participating in a revolution against God. Mm. You know, so to take the line, I obviously think that my mom was correct in this assessment. Like, ultimately, any perspective, you know, there's always going to be something that you haven't heard of that you disagree with more out there.
Right.
So trying to target particular things is, it'll never end.
Well, even with the Harry Potter book, I mean, the British version, the first book was called something else. It was, what was it?
The Philosopher's Stone.
And when it was released here in the US, it was changed to the Sorcerer's Stone, right? I guess, I don't know why.
I thought it was because they didn't think we don't use philosopher in the same way here. Yeah. But sorcerer then sounds more witchy, I guess.
It does,
which, I mean, it's about a wizard. Like,
I believe the American edition of the final Philip Pullman book had a couple of lines removed because of implied sexual content, I suppose. Mm. I again, don't have it in front of me, but I think that happened. And that's a whole country, you know?
Right. Well, Will, you had an anecdote that you were talking to me about back in your school. You were find books.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first library I ever worked at was a university library. Mm. And I started getting really annoyed because, you know, we didn't have any policy of censoring books. But, you know, as I was, you know, working with our material, I kept finding books that had, like, somebody had taped a little piece of paper over parts of the books that they thought were offensive, and on the paper had typed out, you know, something about how they censor books that are inappropriate. It was really bizarre. So some people get really passionate about this and try to, like, go do things, you know, beyond our control. And that's not good. Don't do that.
Don't do that.
It almost makes me feel like these blacked out texts is only calling more attention to it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, if I'm reading that book and it's blacked out, like, I'm going to want to know what's
what are you hiding?
So I don't think it's doing any real work there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we're coming to a close, but JC, maybe we should read the riddle again?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so if you missed the bonus riddle for today, if you are hunting for banned books for the scavenger hunt, go find a book, hashtag Uncensored DC, if you want to find more clues daily, and if you want to post your finds. So today's bonus clue from me is punk shows on the rooftop at this library, you'll see, or find a banned book, or perhaps two or three.
Great.
Thanks, Jesse. Get to searching.
All right. So, you know, this has been an episode of DC Public Library on Full Service Radio, broadcasted live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Please visit dclibrary.org/Banned Books Week to learn more about the library's Uncensored and Banned Books Week celebrations. To participate in the month-long scavenger hunt, listen for the daily clues on Morning Edition on WAMU, or look for hashtag UncensoredDC on social media. Download this show wherever you listen to your podcast by searching for Full Service Radio. Thank you for listening and have a great afternoon.
Bye.
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 Bye.